Welcome to Getting Better. I am Ann Beal, and we are here at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Grapevine, Texas, north of Dallas. And I have a wonderful family with me, the Watts family. I have Jonathan, Colton, and Logan. Now, Logan is 16. Colton is 12, and we won't even mention how old you are.
Hey, I'll be 40 this year, so y'all pray for me.
And, well, I'm just glad to grab you guys during this time at NRB.
It's our honor.
We want to tell your story, and they have lots of books and wonderful things. Lucas has a story, and the book is called, Logan has a story. Logan's story is what the book is called, right?
It's a documentary film that we've done. We've just finished producing it, and it is available now on DVD and digital, and as well as the rental on logansdocumentary.org. And you can find that there, and it just really tells the story in a great way. There's interviews as well as live action scenes. And we just started this project about a year ago, I guess, and God really opened the doors for us, put us in front of the right people. It was never our plan originally to do this, but people have told us for years that we need to make that story into some sort of documentary so other people could hear it and use it. And that's always been our prayer, is through all this tragedy, which God has turned into triumph, I believe, we don't want it to go to waste. We want God to get the ultimate glory out of everything. We want lives to be changed. We want other people that are going through hard situations and troubling times to know, kind of the steps that maybe you could take and what the pitfalls you can watch out for, and how you can always find help in God's word, no matter what trouble you're going through, and know that God is still alive and he's there to help us. And while we don't understand everything, we can trust him.
Right. Oh, gosh. Understanding. Can I see that, Logan? So this book is actually May 21st, 2011, the day our world changed.
Yes.
And you've taken the story and made it into a documentary?
That's right.
And you can get that at
logansdocumentary.org.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, I know that you wanted to share it with us.
Yes, ma'am.
And so if you could just...
Well, the story kind of starts. I had surrendered to preach in February 2011. Never really would have thought God would have taken my life in that direction. And then in March of that year, Logan was born again, which, after a meeting with our teens that morning, I was preaching and he came out of there just under severe conviction and just knew he had to get his heart right with God. We appreciate God, doing that early in life.
And he was six.
He was six.
Wow.
And I'm always cautious dealing with children. But he was, he knew
what to do to make sure he was ready, right?
Yes, I believe so. And God gave us peace about it. But in May of that year is when this accident happened. And we had actually taken our Sunday school class up to our camp in Liberty, Mississippi to go canoeing that day. And we had a bus full of kids and, of course, canoes and all that, and had a picnic lunch afterwards. And Logan was actually swinging on that very swing that's in this book. And that picture was 1 week before, on the same swing, and he was swinging on that swing, and my wife was sitting over to the side on a picnic table, and I'd been swinging a lot of the kids and had like a little tail hanging off the end of the rope, and you could grab it and kind of throw them, and they just loved it, and they would go up high.
Because the exciting part is swinging really high.
Well, of course, nobody wants to swing low.
The wife is always over to the side.
Yes,
out.
She, my wife had literally just told me, she said that is too high. And I swing him one more time, and which really was going to be the last time because there was other kids waiting in line. And when I did, he lost his grip and fell off. And you could even see in the picture the roots and everything on the ground. And when I picked him up off the ground, he was absolutely lifeless.
Is that the swing?
That's the very swing he was on. Wow. That picture
was taken 1 week.
Yeah, that was 1 week before. We took the boys one weekend and the girls the next, and that was on the first trip we took that picture, not knowing that swing would later change his life forever.
Yeah.
And so he fell off of that swing. When I picked him up off the ground, I can remember just the feeling that comes over you is almost indescribable. Because he was lifeless. I mean, he was completely lethargic. There was no, could not find a pulse. He was not breathing. There was blood pouring out of both of his ears. severely, and I picked him up immediately and got on an ATV and rode to the nearest house about a mile down the road. We had no phone service at our camp, and there was no phone at the camp. We called 911, of course, and
so was he unconscious?
He was completely unconscious. Oh, absolutely. There was no sign of life.
And even the breathing.
He started breathing while we were on the road to the house, but it wasn't breathing normal. He was gargling for every breath. If you could picture somebody that was drowning and trying to catch the breath, that's how every breath was. Every breath sounded like it was going to be his last. And it was almost like his body going into shock and making him breathe, which we learned more about since then. I didn't know anything about it at the time. But we called 911 eventually. They got an ambulance, got him to a little small local hospital where they put him on a helicopter and airmed him to Jackson, Mississippi, where when everybody got there, they let the family come in and see him and friends and church members that were, and thank God for a church. I don't know how people get through things like this without that body of Christ around you and loving you.
There from your church.
We did. We probably had within an hour or so, which that is 3 hours from our home, nearly 3.5 hours. And within an hour or so, after getting to that hospital, there was probably 40 plus people, friends and family, and a lot of church members there at the hospital. And they let everyone come in to see him, two at a time, not expecting him to survive at all.
They wouldn't have normally done that.
No, they wouldn't let anybody in the emergency room normally. We don't know. And later on, they told us even that was it, because you know they didn't expect him to make it the rest of the evening, especially not through the night.
Yeah.
And they'd hooked him up to machines, got an intubator breathing for him, and got him up in a room after he didn't pass away that night because he was having some issues and stuff. But after that next day, you know, they put a shunt in his head where they drill a hole, put a needle in there to relieve pressure. Mm-hmm. And they'd had him hooked up to more machines than you can imagine. I mean, it was just all the whole room. You can look at some of those pictures in the book.
Oh, he's got him.
They kind of bring life to the story.
Do you remember any of this, Logan?
No,
you were six. Yeah.
Well, he was unconscious.
Unconscious.
He doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't remember all the way up until a few days before the accident. Really, I don't think.
Okay, so you've got that. That's this book. It actually shows you everything.
Yes, my wife took pictures in the hospital room.
She wanted
to document everything, and I thank God for that because my mind definitely wasn't there. And,
wow.
And you know, we went through a lot.
So, how were you and your wife did that when you were at the hospital? I can't even imagine. Were you just like zombies, like going through the motions, or?
Looking back on it, I can say God just really had us in like a bubble of grace.
Yeah.
People used to tell us all the time, "See, God, we're so strong." And I wasn't strong at all. I honestly, in front of people, I was able to keep my composure somewhat, I guess. But my wife knew what I was struggling with, and you know, she had told me not to swing him so high, and I did it. And I'm thinking, man, I like may have taken my son's life just from swinging on. And I was ate up with guilt, and I was worried sick that he may not make it, and. My daughter, who's not here right now, but she's 14 now. She was just five, barely made five then, and she was there. She was the next one that was going to be on the swing, and she was right there, watched her brother fall. And I was a basket case, really. And
so your legs were moving, and you were, you know, yeah, going through the motions, but barely able to.
I thank God for my wife because she was the rock through all. She was the one that kept her head, you know, was able to, you know, make conscious decisions and even hold us together. And I think all the time now is that she didn't have to be that way. She could have been angry at me, or she could have hated me over this. We could have ended up divorced or even worse through something like this. But she chose to love and forgive instead. I can remember really just kind of falling apart inside and beating myself up a lot. And she would tell me, you know, you can't help him by hurting yourself.
Yes. And lots of dads do stuff like that. I mean, dads, they push the boundaries, you know, because it's,
well, sure,
it's especially with boys, you know, it's fun. Like, you just don't, and most of the time, stuff like that doesn't happen. And so for it to happen,
such kind of a freak accident, right?
Yeah.
So what did they tell you happened to him? Did they tell you all the things that were wrong, or did they just tell you wasn't going to
make it? Yeah, no, they told us a lot. He had a fracture in his left temporal lobe right here. He had a fracture in the back of his skull back there. He was a fractured bone inside his left ears when I was bleeding so bad. And he even had a fracture in his right ear. It wasn't bleeding quite as bad, but it was leaking there too. The MRI showed that there was severe bleeding in the cerebellum, which is in the back of the brain, controls balance and motor function. There was severe bleeding over in the hippocampus of this area. We've learned a lot about brains in that area right there. And the worst part of it, though, was the fact that on the MRIs and CAT scans, it looked like the brain had actually twisted inside the skull some, and they were not able ever to get a clear picture of the brain stem because of so much blood in that area. And that's the
picture for that too.
That's the main reason that they told us there wasn't much hope at all, was because there was almost zero cognitive a correlation between the brain and the rest of the body, because everything travels through the brain stem, and with it being that foggy on an MRI, there's basically no hope. There's not much they could do about that whatsoever.
So they just told you that.
And the pressure inside the brain was extreme. We kept watching this. They call it ICPs, intracranial pressure. It was off the charts. It was really high.
Mm-hmm.
They said sometimes. Yeah, sometimes whenever
so that's the brain. Yeah. The brain thing.
That's the measurement. You can see ICPs is one of those numbers.
ICPs. It was
like intracranial pressure was like 223, I believe it was.
Wow.
It was supposed to be somewhere around 10. So
your
it was.
Wife took a picture of that.
Yeah, she took
showing
a picture.
Where his pressure was.
She took a picture of that every 15 minutes so she could keep up with it.
Well,
document it. But,
yeah,
but
I
yes,
think it's all very confusing, all the medical stuff.
She kept pictures of every IV that was going in him, what it was set at, what medicine he was getting, so she could try to keep track of, you know, which direction they were going with things.
So is your wife a perfectionist?
With that, she is. With her children, she
detail.
Is.
Yeah.
And she's
incredible.
Yeah, she has some gifts, for sure.
So they just basically got him all as best as they could. And
they got it, but the machines were keeping him alive. There was nothing else they could do. He went like this for weeks on, literally, which a day in a hospital like this feels like eternity anyway. But this went on for weeks, and I can remember her and I even getting together, because we had a very busy life outside of this already. We were involved in everything. I had a big job, but you know, it was requiring a lot of us. And we just both came together and said, "This is our son. You know, if we lose everything we got, we'll start over when we get him out. But we'll just focus on him right now and worry about everything else."
Even the finances.
And absolutely. We were at complete peace. If we lose our vehicles, we lose our house, I don't even care.
Right.
And we both made that conscious agreement. It's like, if it comes to that, we're fine with that. And we really were. That was the least of our worries. I said that we can buy another house, we can buy another car, we can't buy another child.
No.
And you know, God never let us miss a meal that whole time. He took care of everything. It is amazing.
Especially with both, neither
and we never know. Asked. We never asked a single person. We told a single person what we needed. It just came in as we needed. And I just so thank God for that, because that was a God.
So how long were you at? So a long time at the hospital. How long were you there like this, in this kind of state?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
It went on for a long time. And after doing everything they really could for Logan, they started sending psychiatrists to our room to talk to us. And they were kind of talking to us to see what kind of mental state we were in, because people do lose their minds in these situations. And that's understandable. I kind of felt like maybe I was.
And how could you not? I mean, the terror
and
the worry and the fear, right? And yet something was holding you. Did you feel that God was holding you in all that?
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
You can look through there and see, you opened the right page right there. But that balloon, it says, "For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep you in all your ways." They wouldn't let anything in the room like that. They allowed that one balloon, and anything else anybody sent, they wouldn't let it in there.
What a great, that's Psalm 91, though.
Yes.
That's a great thing to have in there.
I'm not even sure who sent it to us.
But that was
the biggest help to me, because I constantly look at that thing and say, God, I know you're here. I don't really feel you right now, but I know you're here. And I know that I can't lose my faith. That's all I got. You know, and I've got to hold on to that.
What gets you through down there?
Well, we went through this for weeks on end, and the doctors were not really giving us much hope at all. And they were just constantly telling us, you know, we've done this and it didn't work. We did this, it didn't work. We did this, no hope. And he was stable, you know, as far as heart rate and all that stuff, but they had all the machines that were doing that for him. It wasn't him doing it on his own. And they come one evening and told us, they said, there's nothing else medically we can do. And Logan is 100% brain dead. They said there's no, we've pinched, we've poked, we've pulled on him, we've flashed lights, we've made sounds. They've got sensors all over him. He said it's not registering that he's, you know, even acknowledging any of that. And there's nothing else we can do for him. And tomorrow we're going to have to start making some tough decisions about turning these machines down and slowly eliminating the life support that he's on. And that's the first time they told us that. I guess we're expecting it, but weren't being honest, or at least I wasn't being honest with myself, that it might come to that. And we went back to the hotel that night. And that's what's really miraculous about the story is we went back to the hotel that night. It was late in the evening, and our hotel was literally right across the street from the hospital. And we never left him alone. My mom or her dad or somebody would sit with him constantly. You know? And we went over there to the hotel, and my wife got her Bible out, and we were trying to do our devotion, you know, trying to hold on to what faith we had left and doing our daily devotion, which kind of kept us in check a little bit. And just that night, it happened to be we opened the Bible, and it was in James 5, where it talks about if any be sick among you, let him call upon the elders of the church, you know, and let them anoint him with oil and pray over him, and the prayer of faith will heal the sick. And my wife and I started talking about that because we were raised Baptist, and, you know, and we believe the Bible. We're very dedicated to that's God's word. It is what it says it is. And we absolutely believe that.
Have you ever seen that?
No, we had never seen it. I had never seen it either. And looking back now, and I think it was one other instance in our church when it was done, but we weren't there. But it was never practiced.
And it wasn't talked about.
And we have a good church. I don't want to put down on my church. They were really phenomenal.
A good church.
But
it is interesting because even George Mueller in his autobiography back in the 1800s, yes. He talked about how Christians don't really believe the Bible. Because if they believed it, when it says that verse right there and you'll be healed, or where it says ask and you shall receive, if two or more of you are gathered, you know, all these things it says, and he will answer our prayer. And he will give us.
He had prayers answered.
Yeah, he'll give us the desires of our heart, right? And this one, the first time I saw it, Gene Getz did it at his church, and he said he'd never done it before, but it says to do it, so we're going to try it. So did your pastor do that?
My pastor, this was around right at midnight. And we're reading this and we're talking about it. And we hadn't told even our parents the decisions that they were about to have to make and what they were saying the next day was going to happen. And I'm falling to pieces inside. I'm just a basket case. And I'm trying to, you know, give what kind of hope I can and still manage to pray. And we're going through this. And my pastor calls. It's like after midnight. And he calls and says, Brother Jonathan, I hate to call you so late. And that's very out of character for him. And he said, I hate to call you so late. And he said, but I can't sleep, can't get you off my heart. You know, we got, you know, all this stuff going on. And he just calls out of the blue like that. And we tell him, we said, well, that's the Holy Spirit told you to call us. And I believe that with all of my heart. And to me, that was such an ultimate moment in this whole story. Because if I'm being honest, for those 6 weeks, I'd been praying like I'd never prayed before in my life. I'd fasted and prayed. I'd prayed every morning, noon, night, and even in between. You know, I'm trying to get a hold of God in every way I can. And, yeah. And I tell people even still today, if you want to learn how to pray, you don't really need a book or a program. You need a problem. Because if you really get a problem in life, you will learn how to pray.
That's true. And, that's very true.
And I did. I prayed. But what was weird to me is I was praying harder than I ever had, and yet it felt like God wasn't even listening. And then when this happened, I felt like God was saying, I'm here. You know, and
so you really felt that.
I did. Wow. I felt a peace almost immediately. You know, and we kind of got to the point where, you know, Logan is your child. We know he's saved. We know he's going to heaven. And if you want to take him home, he's yours. We'll serve you anyway. But if you keep him here, we promise to use his life for your honor. And God felt meant to answer that prayer. And my pastor, we told him what was going on. Because he didn't know. And they told him that he was about to unhook him. And we told him what we were just reading. And he said, we'll be there. And he got some other men from and elders from the church. And they drove up to Jackson, which is, like I said, 3 hours away. And they were there at 8 o'clock the next morning. So he had to call them in the middle of the night, too. That's why I tell people, thank God for our church.
Yeah.
You never know when you might need them. And they were there, and the doctors let him come in 2 at a time. They anointed Logan with oil, and they prayed over him. And that evening, he started moving a finger some. When I say moving a finger, I mean just like a twitch. And it wasn't constant, and it was just a little bit.
But you hadn't seen it before.
No, he had not moved anything before. He had not done anything whatsoever. And so that was huge to us. And me and my wife were like getting ecstatic, thinking, you know, maybe he's getting making progress, and the neurosurgeons come back in the room, the ones that were talking about unhooking things, and they said, well, you can cut the head off of a snake, and it will still move. So that's just nerves. It's nothing to get excited about. And we said, well, that's more than he's done since he's been here. Can we please just, you know, hold off and all this? And they said, whatever, we'll wait till tomorrow. The next day, he started, like, moving our legs. Nothing on purpose, but it was something. You know, and it almost looked like a seizure or something. So maybe it's nothing to get excited about, but it was something else. And after that, every day it was something. A week later, he was breathing with the machine. It wasn't probably even over, a little over a week later that he was off of all the machines and breathing everything on his own.
A week later?
About a week later. That's what I tell you. He didn't just jump out of the bed and was healed.
But he just kept.
But he kept getting better. He kept getting better.
Kept getting better.
So, like how it says when I had his first breath with the machine.
Yeah. That's first time amazing. Breathe with the machine. Mm-hmm. So 3:22 that day.
Wow.
And you can see he started at one point. I don't know where it's at. But
you can't see it. But golly, he's getting better. Look.
Yeah. Starts to come off of equipment.
Wow.
It starts to really improve. And some of our nurses. You can see there in that picture.
He
started opening his eyes, which he still wasn't responding, but he started opening his.
How long was that?
That was probably about a week later, too.
Yeah.
I mean, all this kind of happened after he came off the machines. He started opening his eyes during the day, and he was kind of cross-eyed, and he wasn't still paying attention to anything.
He couldn't focus them.
He wasn't awake.
He
was still in a coma.
Oh.
He looks good, but he wasn't. That was the first time Brady got to hold him.
Wow.
You know, so you can go through some of that.
That's really awesome. So did he come all the way too?
Well, that's no. We left that hospital, which is in Jackson. And they
didn't take him off the machines then?
Yes.
Did he get completely off the machines?
He got off the machines in Jackson, but he was still unconscious.
But he could breathe.
He could breathe. And he was functioning completely on his own, but he was still completely unconscious.
So he's still in a coma.
Yes. Okay. They say that what they call that is comatose, I guess. It's like you're in a coma, but you're not requiring medical attention to keep you alive. But he still went away. He wasn't responding to anything we did whatsoever.
Wow.
But so you could look at this.
That's when they moved into
They moved him
so this
when
is
he was stable.
Place. This
he
is
was,
a good place to take a break.
Yes.
And we will come right back and we'll get to Children's Hospital.
Yes.
And where is this? Is in
New Orleans.
Okay.
Orleans.
So stay right here. We'll be right back. Okay. That's good. All right. So when he got to New Orleans, I'll let you pick up from there. So welcome back. We are picking up with Logan's story. He is now still in the coma. He's off all the machines. And Jonathan is going to share, they move him to a new hospital.
Yes.
And so he's at Children's Hospital in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And let us know from there what happened to Logan.
Well, he got to Children's Hospital. We got moved in a new room. And
he's still in a coma.
He's still in a coma when we get there. Wow. But let's see, get all this. Yeah, that's walking there. I want to make sure we were in line. He's still in a coma when we get there. And we start to go. He's going to therapy, which he's not awake. And we've been there probably about a week or so. And then one day when he's in occupational therapy, you'll see.
So they were doing occupational therapy.
They were trying to move him around and do what they could. Good. And you can see this picture right here. They were blowing bubbles in front of his face. I don't know how well y'all can see it, but they were just trying to get some kind of response out of him. And they would even take his hands and hold his arms and try to move him, you know, like a person would normally do. And you can start to see a little bit of a grin on his face. And then he starts to smile a little bit. And that was the first time that we knew that he knew what was going on around him. And I was like, wow, he did something on purpose. And then he started, I don't think we have a picture of it, but he started to poke his lips out like he was trying to blow one. And we was like, Logan, somebody's at home in there, you know, wow, because up until this, it was just a shell of a person. And then you can see the grin and somebody who's been in a coma and who didn't have any function whatsoever, control over his body, now is starting to smile.
So how long was that? How long was that after you got him to the children's?
Once we got to New Orleans, this was probably not even a few days.
You're kidding.
Yes.
So they really knew what they were doing.
They did, and I believe God was just working it in the same thing. Because when we left Jackson, I mean, he was breathing on his own, and he was opening his eyes during the day, some and closing them at night, and things like that. But there was no response. I mean, none. There wasn't a frown, a smile. There was nothing. Yes. Well, we didn't know. We didn't know. And we was asking the doctors, you know, what can we expect from here? And he's alive. We don't know. He could be there like this forever. We don't know. And as anything they know about the brain is that they don't know very much about the brain.
Right. That's actually true.
And he started, once he kind of started coming alive like that, he has such a good attitude. Most people, they say, wake up out of these things. And once they can make emotions and stuff again, it's terror. Oh, yes, because they're not used to being in a body they can't function. And they don't know what's going on, so they cry a lot. They have what they call storming, and they'll just lose all of their emotions. And Logan never did that.
Wow.
When he was in therapy, he was happy. When he's in his room, he was happy. And he finally, after about a week or so of being there, he got to where nothing controlled, but he got to where he could flop his left arm around some on purpose, and he could hold his head up like this up. And otherwise, it would just drop down unless we strapped it up.
You and your wife, really, this was your life, right? Like,
yes.
This is, it just, when you're at the hospital and someone's there, it's like an all-encompassing thing. So this was 6 weeks and then 3 more weeks?
By that time, I mean,
yeah,
we were getting into, I guess, June, somewhere around there. Goodness. I lost track of time.
I bet.
Completely. Our other kids, of course, were at home living with my in-laws, as well as staying with my mom some, and even stay with my pastor some. And they went from a stable home environment to not having parents at home, and their brother's in a coma in the hospital, not knowing if he's going to live. And that's another thing that we talk about when we talk with people going through hard times, you know. I don't care how good your life is, it can be changed in a moment, you know.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because when Dr. Gene gets, when he laid, and the elders came together and they anointed this guy, he had a football-sized tumor in his leg, they anointed him with oil, and it started getting smaller, and it, you know, until it was completely gone. And it sounds, this is very similar, you know, it wasn't just a tumor, I mean, and it did, like his leg was different, but he wasn't, you know what I'm saying? He wasn't going to die. And so part of it is that when you, just because God heals doesn't mean he goes boom, like we in movies.
No, that's and that's one thing we wanted to make. There's several points that we wanted to make when we made this film. As one, it's important to be saved. I think a lot of even Christian films, as while I support them and love them, I think a lot of them give this false hope that, you know, everybody goes to heaven.
Right.
And that's not true. if you're at the age of accountability, which is different, I believe, for everybody, but if you know you're a sinner and continuing to sin willfully without, and you have that conviction, reject the Holy Spirit, then you could die and go to hell.
Yeah,
and hell is real. And so we don't want to give up false hope. And also, this isn't always the outcome. Some people's kids do not make it.
No, I know.
And
that's where when you said to God, you know, if that you know he's saved and if you're in, yeah. you want to take him.
And I meant that.
Yeah. But that wasn't his plan for you, Logan. Yes. And so do you remember any of this part? Any of the hospital stay?
Remember a little bit of when I used to go in therapy and they would hold my head up and stuff because I couldn't really do that. Main thing I remember is Mr. Zeff, our therapist. He was sort of like
the child
funny.
Health therapist. All his job was to entertain children. Yeah. I didn't even know that was a job until this. But every children's hospital has the child life specialist, and that's their job.
That's what they do. They come in and they entertain.
You have occupational therapy, which helps you do things in daily life, you know, mm-hmm. like turning doorknobs or stand, whatever it may be, whatever condition it is. And then you have physical therapy, which tries to get you to use all your muscles, obviously, and try to get you to walk and stuff. And you have speech therapy and try to get you to be able to drink, swallow, and talk. And then you have child life therapy. All their job is make you laugh and have fun. And it's amazing because the medical field has realized
yeah.
how much power there is in having a good attitude and
yes.
being happy.
Yeah.
And a joyful heart.
Laughter is medicine.
Absolutely.
It says that in the Bible.
And a bitter spirit dryness through the bones.
So you need to
be joyful. And even in James 1:2, it even says, count it all joy. When you go through tribulation, a perilous time, when you go through all these hard times, count it all joy. And even in Nehemiah, it said, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And it's so important, no matter what you're going through in life. I don't care. I thought I had all the answers, you know, and now I realize I don't even know all the problems.
Yeah.
But one thing I do know is whatever you're facing, you better not even try to face it without joy. Because if you do, you won't make it. And the medical field, even most of them maybe not being believers, they realize the importance of being happy. And he just told you the main thing he remembers is Jeff.
Jeff.
He remembers.
He made you happy and laugh.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
He would act like a goofball. I mean, he'd come in there dressed like a clown or put balls on his. I mean, he would do anything he could to make these kids smile and
wow.
brought joy to their life.
That's
you know?
Great.
And
how long did it take for Logan to get to this stage where he
this was in 2012.
A year later.
That was a year.
That happened
later.
On May 21st, 2011.
That was they were going to pull the plug.
Yeah.
They were going to pull the plug. They were going to pull the plug.
There's a picture of Jeff in there too.
And your pastor.
In here?
What a wonderful
he's
thing.
In the club.
He's in that one. You know these books, don't you, Colton?
I didn't think Jeff was in that one.
He's in one of them.
He's in that one.
Okay.
He's in that one.
He's in one of them.
Yeah.
Here, I'll
bet
you. So is that Jeff?
No, that's Josh. That's my little brother, Josh. I can show y'all him right there in that picture. But Josh was the first one to get him to laugh out loud, which was the first sound we heard come out of his mouth on purpose.
Yeah, so
that was,
Jeff was the thing.
That was a big deal.
So
that's Josh.
Look at these pictures, all of you guys getting them. So it was a year here at the Children's Hospital?
No, we had got to go home. I think our first trip home was September 11th, if I remember right. Yeah, it was our first trip home, which we ended up going back and
September
forth.
September
11th, 2001? 2011, that year.
2011.
Yeah.
It was our make sure.
First time they let him out of the hospital to get out of there. Wow, there's so many memories come flooding back. When I look at that's another one of Logan's favorite things was pet therapy. You see, they used to bring every Thursday, they would bring dogs in there and they would let them pet on him and stuff. And of course, they were trained to work with kids some. And Mandy, you talk about bring joy to a kid.
Yeah. And they're really trained to stay. The dogs that stay really, they're really good with kids.
Yes.
And calm. There is an, did you see the ministry?
I did. We talked to them. Logan talked to them for a while.
It's
downstairs.
Called Canines for Christ. And they
well,
have
there's Jeff right there. And some of his therapists too, but there's Jeff, the bottom of something. the craft or something they had done together.
That's so funny that that's what you remember. So it was a year, and so how long were you at Children's Hospital before you got to go home and take him home?
So that would have been about another 6 weeks, I guess.
Another 6 weeks.
Something like that, yeah.
Wow. And, I mean, and financially, that is a, you know, people.
I took a whole year off of work when this happened. Mm-hmm. It was impossible to leave my wife at home dealing with this, dealing with kids, and constantly going back and forth to doctors, therapies, and hospitals.
Right.
And
in the world did you support yourself in all that?
God supported us in all that.
Oh.
I mean, literally, we were financially stable, and we, of course, you know,
we had savings.
We did, but we didn't have that much. Oh, not enough to take off a whole year. but God took care of every need. I mean, every
need. How did he do that?
And
just having people help or people come?
While we were in the hospital, they had different fundraisers. We never asked a soul for a penny. Not one time did we ever even make mention of a financial burden. And God just laid it on other people's hearts. They had a raffle for some. And they had a restaurant that said, all our proceeds today is going to go to Logan. We had things like that. We had a singing night. They called it Logan's Night, where they got just a bunch of different Christian groups from around our area together. And they have a concert hall, something about the size of this room, not this building. and they would just build it up, you know. And that was the biggest event they've ever had there. To this day,
wow.
There were cars parked up and down, filled the parking lot, up and down every road, and everybody couldn't even get in. It was just unbelievable, the support. And I think just in that one night, I believe, if I remember right, they raised $17,000, $18,000. And that was just for people giving to come.
And even try Logan's to support. Friends,
yeah.
One of his friends made a lemonade stand, and she also sent him cookies and all kinds of stuff.
That's great.
And one of his best friends in kindergarten, Madeline, she's actually in the film, and she's still a great friend. They're members of our church, great friends of ours today. But she had a stand out in front of her house at Lemonade for Logan,
and sold
lemonade and cookies and
Did
stuff.
Did they do a fundraiser on Facebook?
I don't think so.
They might have. So familiar to me.
They might have. I really don't remember.
Well, you weren't the one doing it, were you?
And we didn't handle the finances either. My mother-in-law was taking care of most of the bills at home, so we wouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
So she was seeing about, I'm glad we could just kind of turn our bank and stuff over to her.
Right.
For the moment, because we weren't late. I couldn't leave the hospital or no bank and make deposits and check on this, that, or the other.
You wouldn't have been able to. You were maxed out.
Yes. And it was such a blessing for us to just be able to stay there with him, focus on him and what he needed, what our family needed. And not have to worry about any of that was a tremendous, and I don't want to make light of that because that's not normal. I've heard of people going in there and filing bankruptcy and maxing out credit cards. And I understand, man. If my heart goes out to you because we would have been there had not God come to me. That would have been us.
So when you think of everything, what is your, where is your heart now? Like where you, I know that you want to get this story out as much as you can, but where are you as far as just, it had to have changed your whole life and your view of God and even, you know, and you were a pastor before that, right?
No, not before that.
Oh, I know you were saying you had trouble speaking publicly.
Yes, no, speaking publicly is not my, I got butterflies in my stomach now, but they're just flying in coordination.
So you weren't a pastor before just, that?
No, ma'am. I started preaching and I was filling pulpits, like the pastor was out on Sunday and I was preaching revivals fairly regularly, I guess, and that was, I just ran a preach in February. This actually happened in May. So that was not that long of a period of time. But I was working and preaching. I was like a lay preacher, you know, but God was just opening doors constantly. And it was after we come out of the hospital, after all this, I kind of took a look back at my life because I used to work nonstop. I left my house 4:35 in the morning. Literally get home 7, 8, 9 at night and still have paperwork and work to do.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the right thing. I thought a man's supposed to provide for his family. And I was just gung-ho dipping in everything I got. But I was never with my family. And after this happened, I look back and say, man, my kids are growing up and I'm missing all of them. You know, I'm about to lose my son possibly. And I hardly see him through the week. And it kind of makes you put things in perspective and find that balance that everybody needs. Because
as important it is for a man to work. The Bible even says a man doesn't work, he's worse than an infidel. I believe you ought to work and provide for your family, but you ought to also love your family and be there for your family. And it made me just look at us and think, you know, money's important, but it doesn't need to be top priority.
No, and it's interesting how the industrial age changed everything. Because before that, farm families, that, you know, people farmed and they all worked together as a family.
That's right.
And so they stayed together as a family. It's amazing. And so once industrialization came, men went off to work.
That's right. Instead of being at home working.
Because
you work like that on a farm, at least you're working with your children.
Yeah, with your children and bonding. And then when war happened, women went to work, right? Yeah. Men went off to work. Women went to work and left the children. And so it's so strange how, we talk about how, you know, when you hear people talk about industrialization and how great it was, but was it really? When you look at how it changed the dynamic of the family.
Yeah. And the family's so important.
And men get lost. Women, I have women do that too. But men get lost trying to provide for the family. Right?
I did. I thought it was so important. I thought what I was doing was right.
But you don't only provide through money.
No, you don't.
And I think that there's so much more to raising your sons just through your influence, your model, your being there. And I don't want to be preaching.
No, it's good.
You know what I mean? I think that people, did you come to realize that? Yeah.
And God, I eventually got rid of my business and was preaching more than I was working anyway. And got to where I told my pastor, I said, God wants us in full-time ministry. I said, but don't tell anybody. And we're going to wait for God to open the door. And he did. That's a whole other story.
Gosh.
And I've been pastoring for about 4 years now, full-time.
So did you say that before Logan's accident?
What's that?
That you felt
he
God was calling?
No, that was after. That was after.
What did you say?
The month before the accident? No, 2 months before the accident, he was summoned to preach. But he just did revivals.
Yeah, I wasn't pastoring. Right. I was preaching. But then God just opened the doors for us to take a church. And he's really blessed there. And now, I mean, our goal is to make disciples out of people, help people. I mean, Jesus said that this is my commandment, that you love one another, you know?
Yes.
I find more joy in helping others than I do anything in the world.
And you said to God that if he
spared his life, we'd use his life to bring honor and glory to him.
Yeah.
And that's our goal.
Yes.
It really is.
You know, and that's an amazing mission that you have now. And Logan, what grade are you in now?
Going in 10th.
You're going in 10th.
Yes, ma'am.
You were singing a song earlier. Would you sing it for us? You remember it?
I can't say I remember all the words.
Okay.
It went like, he's still working on me to make me what I ought to be. He took just a week to make the moon and the stars, the sun and the earth. Jupiter and Mars, oh, how patient he must be. He's still working on me. And in the mirror of his world, reflections that I see makes me wonder why he never gave up on me. He loves me as I am and helps me when I pray. Remember, he's the potter on the clay.
Yep.
That's wonderful. That's thank you so much. Well, I think with that is a great place to stop. We want to have you on again down the line.
Yep.
I just know so much has happened to you guys. And you're going to graduate from high school, like, a couple of years?
Yep, two
oh
years.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, yeah, we'll just check back in, see you guys doing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
We loved it.
Thank you, Logan. I know it's been an exciting week here at NRB. What are you guys doing now? Are you going to the gala?
We are probably going to go eat and go back to the hotel, and we're driving home tomorrow morning early.
Wow.
I believe, so.
Well, I'm glad I grabbed you.
Thank you.
You guys just have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend,
you
and we will just remember you guys, and if we can help you in any way, let us know.
You as well.
And you guys, if you can get the documentary, Logan's Documentary.org,
that's right.
Right? And are there books that they can get as well?
Not right now. Not right that now. Is in the work. We're actually putting together some like Sunday school and teaching material for all age groups.
That would be great.
To use life lessons through this.
Yes.
And how they could apply it to their life.
Wonderful.
And so we'll get there eventually.
Okay. So logansdocumentary.org is where you can find out everything. And in the meantime, remember everybody, keep getting better.